Engage.
The Rancor's Brothel.
Welcome to the Rancor's Brothel, issue number 89. I'm your co-host, Matt.
And I'm your co-host, Cody.
And with us today is fact-checker Troy Neely.
Hello.
And Lucas Wrestling Sucks Patterson.
Ouch.
Fair enough.
Oh. Don't accept that. Fight back. Fight back. It's okay.
I got nothing. Go listen to the heel angle.
What?
Go listen to the heel angle.
Oh, God, I couldn't hear it.
It's a podcast. It so fast.
Follow Network's podcast. Fun. We put in the F in and funny. We're F and funny. No?
Yeah, you fucked that up already.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Gentlemen, this week.
It happened.
It did happen. What happened here locally? We had Wizard World Comic Con. I'm the only one that went because I got free tickets. Probably wouldn't have paid to go. I'm glad they were free. But it was a fun time. It was enjoyable. We'll talk about that in a bit. We're going to talk a little bit about Spider-Man and the Marvel Universe. We're going to talk about what we've been reading, because we didn't do that last week, so now we've got 2 weeks of build-up books to talk about. And all four of us read a couple of the same books, so I imagine we'll have a pretty decent discussion this week, specifically on Star Wars, right? Maybe. Everybody's current now. We just recorded a podcast, and Cody was reading the Darth Vaders, so... just one Darth Vader.
Just one.
And that's it's a bi-weekly?
We think it's double shipping for the first month.
Okay. Interesting choice, I guess. Well, whatever.
Well, they're doing it for the Princess Leia, and I don't know what the point... I mean, it's only the five or six issues anyways, but I know they're double shipping the first in March, so I don't know what the plan is after that, but...
Fair enough. So let's go ahead and jump into the Geek Movie of the Week. And again, the Geek Movie of this week will be Horns, because... The one time Cody independently watches a movie on his own happens to be the week he's not on the show.
And had an ecclesiastical experience. Like, I thought that was one of the best movies I've seen in a long time. So, I was listening to the episode, and I'm like, oh, they're going to do a Geek Movie of the Week. It's going to be something I haven't seen. And then you're like, oh, it's Horns. And I gave the finger to everybody. I gave it directly to my CD players. I was listening to you guys. Because I was like, great. Awesome.
I like the use of the word ecclesiastical.
Yeah, nice. I thought that was something to do with like your joints and tendons.
No.
What's it mean?
It's like a religious experience.
Weird.
Like, I thought it was a fantastic film. So
it was a wonderful film. So let's get Cody's impressions on Horns before we talk about the real Geek Movie of the Week.
As Matt has set me up here.
That's
no, I just think it's a fantastic retelling of sort of the Devil in Disguise. I think it's interesting that it's he is able to.
The devil in
disguise. It's interesting that he is revealing these darker natures of these people around him while simultaneously being accused of having these darker natures that he's not sure whether or not he actually has. I don't see him as being sort of forsaken or punished, which I thought was an interesting connection you made in the show last week. I don't see it the same way, but I understand it.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying.
And, well, let's talk, you know, we're going from two completely different backgrounds, too. Like, I'm looking at this as a Catholic.
Right, well...
You know, you're agnostic, you know?
I am. This is true, but I also, Grady, like, Catholic, so...
Yeah, okay.
Irish Catholics. Yeah. I was at a Catholic church yesterday.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry. No, I'm just kidding.
Was it that one that burnt down?
No.
Oh, okay.
I did dip my fingers in the holy water, though, and I didn't burn. I was surprised.
What did you go to church for yesterday?
My aunt got married.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
So you have an uncle, step-uncle. Step-uncle.
Is that how that works?
Your aunt got married, right?
Yeah.
So I just think they become an uncle.
Yeah, I don't think there's any step in that.
Does it matter? I mean, would it matter if they got married 30 years ago? It would have been the same situation.
Like, if they're your uncle from when you were born, like, you always, like, Uncle Stan has always been Uncle Stan.
But step... Like, implies that there used to be a blood relation, and now there isn't.
There's still not a blood relation.
That uncle never would have been a blood relation, so.
Fair enough. Moving on, Horns.
You've been fact-checked.
Yeah, that's not really a fact. I mean,
No, it is.
No, it is.
Oh, it's a fact.
It's not like a theory or anything.
Yeah.
Hypothesis.
I'm not working on this.
I'm not experimenting with this hypothesis. It's
man,
true.
He's got a 50-page thesis on aunt and
on why uncles and step-uncles are the same thing. What's your doctorate in genealogy?
There you go.
What?
Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah.
Common sense, maybe?
But no, I was... the only topic I thought you guys didn't cover was... at least not too much, was Daniel Radcliffe's performance, which I thought was exemplary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we only really talked about his use of his accent, his American accent.
Yeah. I mean, it's... And I did props to... I don't remember who it was. Someone mentioned Equus, which I thought was awesome, being a theater guy.
I was loyal.
Yep. So
he's all about penises.
Well, you know.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, Loyal.
Wow. All right. I'm sorry. Way to throw Loyal under the bus.
Jeez. Yeah, no, the horse penis one, right? That's the horse penis play?
Yeah, sure. I mean,
there's horses and there's penis in it, right?
Well, he thinks he's a horse. It's kind of a psychological thing. You'd probably really like it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because I like horses and penises.
It's very Freudian, but yeah. No, he's a talented actor, and it's nice to see him being used as, you know, something very, very different from Harry Potter.
Absolutely. And, like, even, like, The Woman in Black. Like, his performance in that wasn't awful. It was a crappy movie. But he did fine in it. He can do other things besides play one character, so I'm really happy that he's able to do that.
Well, and there was that... What was the name of that movie? He played Allen Ginsberg? Can't remember right now, sorry.
Fair enough. Who's Allen Ginsberg? I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. No, I'm not. Who is he?
Go watch the movie.
Okay. Go watch the movie that I don't know the name for you. Right away, sir. No, Daniel Radcliffe, solid performance.
Yeah.
He sold the role. Like, by the end of the movie, you're not seeing Daniel Radcliffe. You're seeing, DJ, this laid-off DJ whose girlfriend died. What's going on? And
yeah, it is. And I thought that it was it's a fascinating hipster arc. I mean, it's interesting because it starts out sort of as a whodunit murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that Joe Hill does, I feel very well in his writing, is that much like his father, he uses the supernatural as an element, but not, I don't want to say it, it's not the main driving force.
Yeah.
Like, it's really just a force to reveal the humanity, the darker sides of humanity that are already there.
Yeah.
The Horns have nothing to do with those desires whatsoever. Those desires are just suppressed or blocked or buried or
except
what
for the Langoliers. That was about giant flying walnuts.
Yeah, the Langoliers is a little weird. I mean there's some out there that are more fantasy based, but
hopefully Joe Hill's better at writing endings than his father.
Yeah.
he's attending to crap make crap endings to his stuff.
Dreamcatcher, horrible ending. Great book.
Yeah.
It terrible ending.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it. I like it quite a bit. It's weird, but it's interesting.
I just like it because Tim Curry was
well, you're talking about the movie, you're talking about the book.
Because
the book is really, really messed up. Like, the movie is just trying to PG what really should be, like, not seen for television.
Well, they're redoing it, so I'm hoping that they go a little closer to the source.
Have you read it before?
Yeah.
The original was that a theatrical release?
It was a two-part miniseries.
Yeah,
it was a TV miniseries.
Yeah,
TV. I think, is this reboot they're doing? Remake? Is that going to be a, is that a theatrical release?
I do not know.
I would be interested to see.
I mean, honestly, his best stuff would be best suited for a miniseries because his books are lengthy and there's a lot in them.
Right.
So, it would be perfect on, like,
in this modern era of let's take a novel and make a book or a movie out of it, then we're going to end up with a three-part, you know?
Right.
Like 140 pages of The Hobbit being, you know, it's longer to watch The Hobbit movies than it is to read The Hobbit now.
Well, but I also think...
You can do that with him?
No, because I don't feel like his stories play out the same. It's not... I couldn't see where you could chop the book. See, I even feel like the TV movie where they chopped it sort of artificially, it felt weird. There's this... With it and some
or
of his
stand.
Other ones.
You know, that's another one where they had to chop it at weird points.
That one, though, does feel a little episodic when you read it, it is just kind of this constant growing terror that just escalates. You jump back and forth in time, so the timeline isn't continuous, but I don't feel like there's a spot in it where you could just stop and say, this is the first part of my movie, this is the second part. And there's a lot of underage sexual blossoming in that book that is key to it.
You mean, like, doing it and stuff?
it's, I would say it's way more, we'll go back again to the word ecclesiastical. It's a bit of a, like, it's a mind-opening and altering experience. It's like, that's what he's trying to talk about.
I think
about
I still don't understand ecclesiastical. well. Just through sex in there, and I don't remember any sex in church.
Well, worshiping, and you know, like, you know.
I'm just kidding, man.
Touching a higher being and power.
Or a vagina. A
plane. Yeah, mm-hmm. Plane of existence. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would be the hard part with remaking it, I feel. It's because you can't really show children doing that in a movie.
I mean, they did weird. It with the Blue Lagoon, man.
Yeah, but that movie was also made 30 years ago.
Yeah, like, I'm sorry, have our morals gotten better in America since then?
No, but to his point, I mean, most movies nowadays, if the characters are 11, 12, they always cast them a few years older because people have a problem seeing young kids do more adult things, even though we all did stupid things that, you know, our parents didn't want us to do it, you know.
Have we all seen the movie Kids?
No.
Yeah, perfect example. Really? That movie would never get made today.
No. That's one movie that is like, what the fuck did I just watch?
Really? I'm going to get a
hold
of that.
You will.
I mean, I've read about it.
I'll bring it to you.
Yeah. You have it.
Yeah,
wonderful.
Another movie I'll bring to you.
Okay, sold. Pick you up next week to go play Dungeons and Dragons.
We'll do that.
No, I mean, it's
so messed up.
There's a reason why...
Rosario is in that, right?
Very young.
Yeah.
There's a reason why high schoolers, you know, in film and television are played as 25, 26, 30-year-old actors.
Well, I always thought it was because of the problem with casting underage kids is they only work certain hours of the day, and you have to have tutors on site, and you have to have this, that, and the other. If you just make them 19 instead of 17, then you don't have to follow those rules anymore.
Well, but I think that there's a much larger jump, I think, in it than that, if you look at TV and stuff. I mean, it's not just that we're casting 19-year-olds and 17-year-olds. We're literally casting 30-year-olds as 15-year-olds.
Yeah.
I mean, you have other things, like the, I don't remember the chick's name, Superbad, the sex scene with McLovin. That chick's mom was on set watching that, like, she had to be there for that. There was a consent form that she signed, and she had to be there.
Because the girl was underage.
She was underage.
I mean, but beyond the legalness,
give you a
it's...
blowj.
I mean, if you were to watch something like I Know What You Did Last Summer with actual 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, like
completely not believable at that point.
That's what I'm like. It would be a totally different film if they were actually like go take a picture at a local high school. Don't get in trouble. Of 15-year-olds and imagine them in that movie. Like it's not the same. You wouldn't
we
watch that film.
We are not condoning taking pictures of random high schoolers at their school. Just everybody.
It's a
clear.
Mental snapshot. You probably know some high schoolers. Don't be weird, guys.
like Jason Sudeikis on a him and Owen Wilson and Hall Pass, where he's like taking mental snapshots, blinking his eyes.
That was on this morning.
That's funny. Troy, you're gonna say something.
Which is actually why I liked. Project Almanac so much was most of the actors in that movie were actually closer to high school age. Mm. Like some of them were maybe in their mid-20s, but some of them were also
they had the look.
Some of them were also 18, 19, so they were very much at that age. So,
like Ellen Page, you could have Ellen Page play a 12-year-old.
I was gonna say,
like, have Dave, no issue.
Like Dave Franco, the film he's in now, he plays like a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
But I also think if you look at, we go back to like, say, Hunger Games and Battle Royale. I feel like Battle Royale is more visceral, not just because it is, in fact, more visceral.
But it's children.
Those are children. Whereas, you know, you look at the Hunger Games, and you're like, yeah, she's like 26 years old. You can tell. You know
I could
mean?
Run into her. In
yeah,
a
but isn't,
there was
isn't,
only one
she
young
votes.
Child.
But isn't Katniss in the book like 15 or something?
That's what I'm trying to say.
She's a hair older. I think she's like 16, 17.
Is that there's,
but
there's,
that's the point. Like, they're never, like, you would never actually cast a 16-year-old in that role. Just because people won't be, wouldn't, people well, like, just can't handle it.
Look at Game of Thrones. I mean, the kids in that, they're like 14, 16, and that's obviously not, Daenerys is like 14 in the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously
well,
not going to
yeah,
see that
but,
on TV.
Yeah, the but first couple chapters, she's getting plowed by, you know, the horse lord.
Right. Okay, like, and what I'm trying to tell you is that I've read Game of Thrones, and it is way worse. Like, to imagine a 14 or 15-year-old in those scenes that they describe in It would be...
Well, now I got to read it. Now you've tickled my fancy.
Like it is, it. I mean, it's right written at that age, right when puberty is hitting. So I feel like it's a horror book, really about the blossoming of puberty. Really,
yeah. You know,
and they jump back and forth between time about all this sort of awakening of feelings and desires and stuff. It's a major humanist undertone in it. It
brings back the idea that I've had of, like, you think about past sexual experiences, and you think about the ones from before you were 18. Does that make you a pederast? You think about the first time you get to second base, and you're like, man, those were some great boobs. But she was 13 at the time.
I was a little older, I guess, so.
Oh, okay, well, sorry for you. The rest of us were enjoying some num-nums. No, I was just curious. Thoughts? No, I'm just kidding. We'll move on to something else geeky. But everybody approved of Horns then. Great movie.
I've still only seen half of it. So
really? You didn't finish it? No. You had a week. Oh, it was so good, dude.
So next week's geeky movie of the week.
We'll be discussing the second half of it at least.
Jesus.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix, so everybody should go watch it. It was so wonderful. You will love it. So, gentlemen, what have you been reading? Nobody?
Books and stuff.
Books and stuff.
Well, Troy spoke first. You go first.
One thing that I picked up this week was The Dying and the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's an Image book by Jonathan Hickman. It's really good. It's very... It's an out-there premise. It starts with there's this murder at a wedding, and then it just, like, there's all these different stories and elements that kind of, like, basically are going to somehow tie together, but, like, it's, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but
it's like all those movies, like Valentine's Day and...
No, so, like,
in Paris and...
New Year's.
Like, you know, Cloud
Atlas. Where you have, like, those huge casts, you know, and they all link up at one tiny point.
No.
You know, like, Cloud Atlas? Like, sort of more...
Never watched it all the way through. I couldn't make it.
Okay.
Seriously?
But more...
Sucked.
But more...
So sucked penis.
More of that sort it. Of, like, conceit, I guess. More of that, like, yeah.
And the guy that plays Jarvis was in it.
Okay, great. Still didn't like it.
Just throwing that in there.
I made it an hour and 15 minutes in before I called it.
Halfway?
Yeah. I was done.
It's a great movie.
I thought it was good.
Sure, I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. Great. Awesome. Hated it.
You're going to want to shoot people when you watch kids.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
I want to shoot people right now. I don't even care. Anything else you've been reading?
The Darth Vader book was really good.
Okay.
We'll talk about that. What else did I read? Oh, Nameless, which is a Grant Morrison book.
Mm-hmm. That was one of mine.
Very, very odd book as well.
Very interesting, though.
Very interesting, yeah.
Gotta love the Grant, though.
Yeah.
Sorry. Lucas, what have you been reading?
Well, Nameless is one of them. I picked up Postal, which is interesting. Oh, for life of me, I cannot remember who wrote it. It's a Top Cow comic. Image Top Cow, actually. Don't put too many things out anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, it has a Top Cow name on it, which I thought was interesting. Hmm. But it is about a young man. They live in a town called Eden, and the population on the sign is, like, scribbled out. It is a town where criminals go to live, but to sort of, like, try to be normalized. And so, like, if anybody, you know, commits a crime in this town, they're executed. It's a town where everything is supposed to be perfect, even though it's, like, a really shithole town. But the main character's name, I can't remember his name right now, but the main character has Asperger's. And so, like, when he speaks, like, the way it's written is, like, somebody who has that would talk. You know, he repeats things. It's very monotone.
So it's very an accurate representation of a person with an illness.
It really is.
Or a disability.
Okay. Which is, in a comic book, I think it's kind of hard to capture. But the way it's done is, I think, very well done.
That's interesting.
And he ends up kind of getting involved.
Since I work with kids with autism, I should maybe tell my boss.
Right, well, I mean...
Is it...
It's
Is it mature content?
It is mature content.
Okay. Yeah.
But
we've been striving to find some comic books to have, like, at the office for kids to look at.
Right. You know? Yeah, no, it's very mature. Okay. But it's an interesting, you know, a crime happens and he kind of witnesses it and ends up being involved with getting to the end of that story.
Okay. Cool. Cody, anything?
Still catching up on the giant pile of comics I bought last month from Downtown Comics. I still have another giant pile to go buy here in another week or two. Today, just because I had a friend, actually, it's the first time I was shouted out on Facebook by a friend who was like, what'd you think of these? And I'm like, I haven't read them yet. So I went out and, specifically bought Darth Vader 1 so I could, read and talk about that.
Now that you just read it earlier today while you were here and said a couple things, now I have to go buy it. I wasn't going to because I thought it was a limited series.
It's really good. I forget who writes it. You know, off the top of your head. Is it Gillen?
It's Gillen.
It is Gillen.
Yeah.
Gillen, I talk about this on the show a lot. I don't think anybody else reads it, though. What is it that Gillen? The World War II book. Gillen's doing an alternate history World War II book that is really, really good. Gillen writes dark
stuff.
Yeah, Uber. That's what I was trying to think of. Uber, and then he also does Wicked and Divine. He does a lot of dark stuff, and I feel like his voice is very well suited to Vader. When I'm reading the word bubbles, I'm not hearing James Earl Jones, but that's okay.
I did. I absolutely did. I almost kind of, in a way, made myself do it just because I was like, I'm just hearing. Yeah.
It was a little, I don't know. I always feel like Vader was very wordy in it, which I thought was okay because it's nice to see his perspective. But it unlocks a whole new view of Vader and his relationship with the Emperor.
Yeah.
And he's also doing some things on the side, maybe, that you're not quite sure what he's doing. And he's clearly trying to, do his own thing. He's definitely being accused by the Emperor for the failure of the Death Star. So he's trying to figure out what's going on. Which, I also read Star Wars number 2 and talking about how he clearly has interacted with Luke a little bit, that something's going on.
Yeah.
He realizes the lightsaber is his and stuff like that. So you see the budding knowledge is showing up a bit.
Yeah. You know, you don't get that in the movies when you go from the first one, from A New Hope to Empire Strikes Back. Like, when did he figure out that this guy's name is Luke Skywalker? Do they have spies? They never explain that kind of a thing. Where do they get the intelligence from? So this kind of does a good way of tying that together.
I found myself questioning, like, the movies. Like,
I need to go watch them, right?
And I'm sitting there reading this, and I'm like, wait, when did this happen? Like, I mean, I know when the comic happens, but I'm like, I'm trying to figure out when the facts, like, when you get the facts of some of these things. I'm like, I gotta watch these movies again.
Yeah.
Because I need to coalesce everything.
Maybe that'll be next week's movies that I watch, like Friday, Saturday night when Natalie and Joe are asleep. Joe is starting to be very interested in Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Ever since we went to the Star Wars release party at the Androids Dungeon in Scenic Avon, Indiana, I brought back a Darth Vader ring, and Joe's like, is he a bad guy? And I was like, yeah, through most of it. And then the very end, he's pretty good. And Joe's like, what? So we saw some cosplayers of Darth Vader at Wizard World Con this weekend. He's like, Daddy, is that a bad guy? The Androids Dungeon at 9719 East U.S. Highway 36, Suite Q, Scenic Avon, Indiana. 46123.
Who's not open on Sundays?
Correct.
We actually did mention that last week when we did our fake Sunday commercial.
Yeah.
This Sunday, come on down. We won't be here.
The end. So Joe was asking about Darth Vader a lot, and I had to tell him, I was like, well, Joe, it's from a series of movies that you and Daddy will watch when you're a little older. And it wasn't because of the content. It's like, he needs to be mature enough to comprehend the story. I don't want it to be ruined.
Yeah.
Like, when me and him watched X-Men Days of Future Past 2 weeks ago. Okay? He's just looking at the cool action sequences. He doesn't give a crap about the plot action. That's fine. Yeah. I can sacrifice that. Star Wars will not be sacrificed for my son. He will be of an age that he can decide to either enjoy them or hate them. If he hates them, he will be gone.
If I had a son, I don't know that I could watch Star Wars, like, and share that bonding moment. Because anytime I watch the newer versions that I have of Star Wars, I just scream at the television, that scene's not in the original, the whole time. Where did those guys come from? Han Solo ran from, like, 4 guys, not 55 units.
Someday Cody Jr. is going to be like, I don't know what it is. He's going to be on a podcast. I don't know what it is about my dad, but whenever we watch Star Wars, he just gets really mad and starts drinking. So, I don't like Star Wars because it brings up bad memories. Anything else you've been reading, Mr. Cody?
Lots and lots of D&D rule books.
Yeah, because next week, Friday, the 20th, we will be getting together and playing a Rancor's Brothel Dungeons & Dragons, so that'll be your next couple series of episodes here at the dungeon.
Assuming everything goes right. You always say these things like we're promised, and then, something's going to happen.
Yeah. No, we will be there, damn it. I have recently read, I got the 4th installment of the Ghostbusters Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles crossover, so I sat down and read the whole thing. Super enjoyable for a fanboy from the 80s. An uninspiring story, nothing crazy about it, but the turtles are trying to use Krang's technology to make a portal, and they end up at a different Earth, an extra-dimensional Earth, which is the Earth that the Ghostbusters are in. So implying that the Ninja Turtles and the Ghostbusters do not exist in the same universe.
I was going to ask that.
Interesting.
Which is weird, because in other IDW crossovers that I've read, it is implied that they're in the same universe.
Well, there you go then.
I just find that weird, because I was talking about it when we were recording the X-Files
Retcon!
Crossover. The X-Files crossover with the Crow, Transformers, Ghostbusters, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they do visit all of them. Like, just driving from one place to the next, so.
This book is written for children, or, excuse me, for young adults that are fans of the current incarnation of the Ninja Turtles, that have started picking up the Ninja Turtle books. This book, or this series of books, is written for them to get a crossover to the Ghostbusters. It is not for Ghostbusters fans to appreciate Ninja Turtles, it's for Ninja Turtle fans to appreciate Ghostbusters. In the fact that since they go to the Ghostbusters universe, there's a lot of Easter eggs that make people wonder, like, what the hell is that? Just examples, Donatello putting on the headgear that Louis Tully puts on in the first Ghostbusters, and they scan his brain. You know, things like that. Dan Aykroyd famously has he has his own brand of vodka, and it's in a bottle shaped like a crystal skull, happens to be on Ray Stantz's desk. You know, there are all sorts of tie-ins, but this series is done from the perspective of the Ninja Turtles being introduced to the Ghostbusters, not vice versa. So when you read it, you get that kind of a sense, which is fine. You know, I mean, that's what IDW is trying to do to move books. I don't care.
I just wonder why they would put them in separate universes. If it's is it a specific plot device? Is it absolutely necessary that they're
from different places? There's an ancient Japanese demon in the Ghostbusters universe that is. Krang is an extra-dimensional being, is a much older than he doesn't have a human lifespan. So 1,000 years ago, he was interacting with this demon's sister, and they were plotting together. And the brother finds out, tries to confront them. They push him into a portal where he is stuck in limbo now for 1,000 years.
Gotcha.
The turtles going from universe A to universe B open a gateway for the brother to escape. He, in limbo, gained more powers and can now inhabit bodies. He takes over Casey Jones, who was with the Turtles when they went through the portal. You know, it's it is what it is. You get to see the Turtles match up with their Ghostbusters counterpart, which is kind of cool.
Plus, with them both existing in New York, it solves the problem of where are these guys at when each of them are having their own different adventures.
Funny scene. Sense. After they meet up, the Ghostbusters say, okay, look. Let's go back to the firehouse. You come with us. We'll run some tests, make sure everything's cool. And he's like, but we're not all going to fit in Ecto-1. And the guys are like, what's the address? And he tells it to him. He's like, okay, we'll take the center line. Like, you know, we'll go through the sewers. We'll probably beat you there. It's kind of funny, you know. But yeah, it brings up that point. So, an enjoyable series, especially for a fanboy. And again, great Easter eggs. And when you read it, go into it as the mindset of a turtle fan being fed the Ghostbusters. And it makes it a much more enjoyable story. Okay, I got my Star Wars. I'm going to get those out of the way. What kind of S.H.I.E.L.D.? We have now had 2 issues of the S.H.I.E.L.D. series inspired by the hit TV series, as it says on the cover. We said this on Mad Chat, which came out earlier this week. Anybody, who read it here? Me? Lucas,
I read it. Yeah.
Troy?
Mm-mm.
Nothing for Cody? Totally thought it was going to be continued adventures of Clark Gregg and his motley crew. It is not.
I didn't. I pretty much had a feeling that it was going to be Marvel.
Yeah.
616 standard.
It's
yeah.
616 following Phil Coulson. And yes, we get some of the characters. We get Fitz. It's kind of told retroactively, it seems. So there's a kind of an overarching narration from the Asian chick.
What's her name?
May. From May talking to Kobe Smulders, or Maria Hill. It gets confusing after a time. But yeah, you get tie-ins of certain characters, but it's in the face, like, you talk about the X-Men, in it, you know, and I'm like, wait, Clark Gregg can't talk about the X-Men? The X-Men don't exist! No! This isn't right! So, once I got over that hump, an enjoyable book.
Yeah.
More humanized than most Marvel comics, I think. More real world, which is cool.
Not inhumanized.
Ha! Look at you! She's got a kitty face. Thoughts? Oh, go ahead.
No, just hey, it's interesting to me, having not read it and not picked it up, that you would model a comic specifically off of the TV show, but not theoretically follow the TV show that's going on. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like DC did that with Arrow, and apparently and it's even written by one of the producers of the show, and apparently that comic is going really well because you're drawing that TV base into the comics. And while I'm sure there's a lot of crossover for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and comic book readers, it's weird to me you'd bring in the characters but not bring in the story. You'd think you'd be coming from TV into comics and not going, oh, I really like comics and I like the show, I'll pick up both. You know what I mean? Like,
I think it's their way of trying to draw people who've maybe come across the show just by chance and trying to draw them into the comic world, but like integrating them into the comic world proper instead of creating a new world of... Because then it would get funny, because like you said, in the cinematic universe, you can't have the X-Men. So in this comic book, you're able to introduce the X-Men, whereas if you did the comic book based off the show, would they still use the X-Men? Because they're not part of it, but...
I guess
that
makes
sense.
It's
all kind of weird, but... I was surprised that they really included, you know, more characters from the show in the book, because Phil Coulson's been around for a little while. He was introduced...
2008?
Yeah, sometime 2007? After Iron Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... But, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. I'll follow it. I'll see
but
how
talking
it
about books
out.
That double ship, didn't that double ship in January? And we haven't had one since, right?
Yeah?
Yep, we had two issues, yep.
So I wonder, is the next one due out this upcoming Wednesday?
I don't know. I haven't...
Not sure.
I haven't checked the upcoming this week, whatever.
Well, John Sullivan of the Android's Dungeon. If you can contact us, let us know.
He doesn't listen to this.
No, he doesn't.
Jerk.
Last thing to talk about, Batman, Endgame Part 4, issue number 38. You guys haven't read it. Is this on anybody's radar? Does anybody read Batman currently?
Well, yeah.
Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo.
I literally, when you guys come over for this, supposedly you will see my stack of comics. It's like this high.
Your
like,
to-do list?
My to-do list is probably 90 comics. So
oh
I've got
weird.
I've got a lot to read before I get there. I'm sure it's pulled. It's sitting for me at Downtown Comics. I just haven't gotten that far yet. But I've heard it's fantastic. Like, I couldn't buy them all at once, and so I sorted through them, and Pete's like, take all the Batman ones. He's like, you need to read it. So I know it's got to be good if he's saying you need to read it, but I just haven't.
I'm honestly ashamed of myself that I don't have any current Batman. I mean, I've got the first three trades, so I'm still, you know...
Like Court of Owls and stuff?
Yeah, so I'm only through...
The court comes back into it in 38.
Yeah, I'm only through Death of the Family, Death in the Family.
Yeah.
So I'm only through that, so I still have Zero Year and then the current, whatever they're calling it.
Endgame.
Yeah, is it Endgame?
Yeah.
So... yeah, I wish I would have picked him up, but, you know, I just didn't, so...
I won't ruin anything, but do you remember when Joker cut his face off, and he had to wear a face mask, and then all of a sudden one day, magically, he has a face again? It explains that.
Oh. Well, there you go.
It gives you, this issue gives you, and it explains it, like, subtly, like, you just put two and two together and realize, oh...
Everything clicks.
How the face fits. This gives you, at least in this new incarnation of Batman, this gives you the definitive Joker background arch, not story. You don't know Joker as a kid, you don't know if his daddy beat him, you don't know how he got this
scars.
Smile, why so serious? But you get the idea. You get more of an idea than you've ever gotten from pre-52 DC Universe. So, everybody needs to read this now. Because I want to talk about it. Natalie hasn't read it yet either, so I can't even talk about it on the show.
Do I need to read the first 37? Because
No,
but you should probably read the beginning of Endgame.
Yeah, you should start at, like, you know, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39.
I would say
Fuck. I don't do math.
I think it started at
35.
Yeah.
It's right here, or in the other stack.
So, just for my sake, so 34 was the last issue of Zero Year? Or...
No, because Zero Year gets a little weird. Matt's counting on his fingers.
34. Yeah, because it'll be 35, 36, 37, 38.
Because he did a couple of stories that weren't Zero Year specific, I thought.
I didn't really have to go get in the box and look. I'm not sure.
Zero Year lasted like a year. It's probably going to be two trades.
Okay.
And it was... I'd be interested to read it
in one sitting. Reading it over a year, I felt it was very disjointed and weird. Still a good story, but just hard to keep track of what's all going on because it was a big story.
Confession time. I've only been reading the trades. I buy the monthly for my wife because she's a big Batman fan. I've only read the trades. Mm. I only read them in a lump. I haven't even read Endgame. I read this issue because I heard the rumor, and now this has sparked it. Now I have to get all the issues out and read them. I have to do the continuous now because of this one little book.
I mean,
how far back do you have the single issues? From the beginning, or?
No, not beginning. I think I started buying them at, like, in the teens, late teens, maybe.
Okay.
That would have been
probably not hard to find. Still
Death of the Family.
Yeah, I think so. So.
I have them all. I Scott Snyder's great. Like, if you want to talk about one writer that's killing it at DC, it's Scott Snyder.
And we picked up a couple of, like, variants just for collection. So, like, I have, like, issue 6 and a variant that's worth, like, $100, and we got it for, like, $5. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, I will end up sitting down and reading all of them back to back to back. So.
No, I'm sure Snyder, because he makes, if you read his stuff prior to the New 52, he built some really interesting stuff. His, honest to goodness, you want his best stuff? This is not even his best stuff, in my opinion. You need to get the trade called The Black Mirror.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Which was awesome.
So good.
He does sadistic killers really well, so I'm sure his Joker, and this is the last Joker that he think he might do for all of his run on Batman. He's saying at least for quite a long time he's not writing any more Joker. So I'm sure it's going to be great. Because Death of the Family was good. It was solid. But, I mean, I'd like to see what else
he's
doing with
it. If this doesn't continue the story where we would end up with the background information of the Joker, like if they try to cliffhanger it or something, I could totally see DC retconning it because this is so different from what you've ever learned about the Joker. So that's why everybody needs to read this book, because this is like, it's just fresh. It's fresh in a way that we haven't had for a while in Batman, so it is what it is. Check it out. Cool?
Cool.
Everybody has homework now. Batman 38. Get on it. Gentlemen.
There is no Shield this month, by the way.
There isn't.
No. Not this, about this week.
It? Oh, this week. Okay. It's like, shit. That's a while. Right. So about gargoyles. Who here liked gargoyles when they were a kid?
Man.
Who didn't?
Yeah. We're making this gargoyles thing happen. We just need to watch it. I haven't seen it since I was a small child. I don't play the gargoyles game. I have it. You got a tape player?
Behind the scenes, we have talked about gargoyles several times and how we need to do a gargoyles episode.
You're welcome, by the way. Because I brought it up, I think, in the Anne Rice episode when we talked about this.
I'm the only person at the table that has, in recent years, watched the entire series.
My wife did. She borrowed them from a friend.
I've watched it recently, just not the entire thing.
I went it wasn't start to finish. Like, I started, the middle of season one, but then I got back around to it, because when they end the season, then they start it again, you know?
It's a really long series, though.
You know, it's not so bad. Especially, when you're watching it the way I was, because it was, Monday through Friday at, midnight on Disney XD. And so I'd get 5 episodes a week, and I would watch them that morning, while I was having breakfast. So it was pretty painless to do.
I think it would be painful. It was a really good... I mean, I thought it was a good TV show.
Oh, it was a wonderful show. And it holds up. It's a lot of fun to watch, still.
I'm still waiting for them to make some sort of live-action visit, because that would be amazing. Man.
You know what, though? I mean, with Disney right now, and... You know, how Maleficent worked. They are doing... Which one now? Which one's next?
Cinderella.
Yeah. There's Beauty and the Beast talks.
Yeah.
It could happen. Really happen.
Seriously, Beauty and the Beast isn't going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, it's happening.
And Thundercats, I think, would make great movies.
Oh, my God.
Thundercats... Thundercats would be fun. I wonder if there's a market for it in people that aren't our age.
Thundercats.
You would have to reboot the TV series.
It didn't go over well when they rebooted it. Cartoon Network rebooted it.
It was great, though. I was so upset that it didn't.
For people our age.
They did the same thing with He-Man, too, and it didn't fly.
It's just...
He-Man's got a lot more problems, I think, than Thundercats would have, but... Thundercats, the second series, or the new series, was good.
It was solid.
You guys see that Lego thing, Kaima, Legends of Kaima or whatever? The guy looks like
Chima.
Looks like Lion-O.
An exact replica
of Lion-O.
Exactly what it looks like to me.
Weird. I need more Chitara in my life. This is the first time I thought of fucking a cat. I'm just kidding. She was attractive, but still an animal. Like, it's weird.
Bringing it back to Deadly Class.
Don't read Deadly Class.
Shut up, read it. It's so good.
It's okay. You suddenly brought up exactly why now there can't be a live-action Thundercats.
Because it'd be like having Tim Burton's ex-wife play the monkey in the Planet of the Apes remake.
Yeah.
Helena Bonham Carter.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's going to be a very, very...
I defined women by the man they were married to. I'm sorry.
I don't think they were ever actually married, were they?
Huh?
I don't think they were ever actually married.
Yeah, they were married for a very long time. Like 11 years or something.
I don't think they were married. I think they were together.
Google! Somebody Google this. Keep talking.
They really recently split, like, earlier this year. Like,
keep talking.
No, I mean, come on. A live-action Gargoyles film? Who wouldn't want to see that?
No, I agree. No, I think live-action Gargoyles would be a lot of fun.
I mean, you could still have to CG it, though,
right?
Yeah, but you could still almost have the same people doing the voices.
You could have the same people doing the voices if you CG'd it, though. That would be pretty neat.
It would just be great.
I agree.
I mean, Ed Asner, if you're going to do this live-action and CG and do the voices... Ed Asner is Hudson. We've got to get that going now.
Time's a ticking.
For a fat guy, he is like super old, like in dog years old.
Oh, my people don't survive that long.
Like, you ever go to the old folks' home and you see that 92-year-old outside smoking with a can of oxygen? There is not a fat friend sitting next to him. Okay. Yes. He was only partners with Helena Bonham Carter from 2001 to 2014. Good job.
Man, you almost guessed the right number of years.
He was married in 1987 to 1991 with Lena
Gieske. I don't know what that is. I know they have kids together, though, too. So.
There's your two children.
Yeah.
There's your old entertainment news section from the Frank Gore Brothel.
Things that Matt didn't read about when they happened. Man, Vietnam! Did you know we lost? It's so weird.
Troy's been fact-checked now, too, because he thought they were married.
I did not say that.
You did.
I absolutely did not.
You didn't say that on the podcast.
You want to go back in the recording? No, you absolutely not.
Oh, so Gargoyles, one of these days.
Gargoyles had everybody from Star Trek The Next Generation on it at one point or another.
I'm going to jump back to Thundercats for a minute, because there was a really, really great fan-made trailer out there.
Mm-hmm.
That had, like, every big name actor you can think of, like Brad Pitt, Vin Diesel, I mean, a ton of people. And all they did was, like, they CG makeup things from other films and
made it look
It looks so good.
Vin Diesel's...
Pantera.
Yeah. And was Brad Pitt?
He was Lionel.
Was Lionel? Okay. Yeah.
It was, like, images from Troy when he's got, like, the...
That's right.
So good, though.
Yeah, it looked actually pretty legit, and like it was a good like case for them to make a freaking movie, and I wish they would.
I don't think that'll ever happen. Well, I mean, the '80s cartoons are gonna die.
It will never happen. But
IGN did the same thing 5 years ago with Zelda, and now we're getting a live action Zelda, so we can all hope.
I still don't know if that's, let's wait till filming starts. Fair enough.
Let's see some test footage first.
What was the thing I saw on Facebook today? It was like one of those like 97% of people won't reshare this status, blah blah blah. But it was like. It was a picture of Link, and it was like 2% of people will look at this and call this person Zelda.
I see it, too.
I mean, how...
Do not let your friends be that 1%.
I see even more than that.
Say, what? Like, how are you going to have a movie with a silent protagonist who just runs around and goes, "Yeah!" the whole time?
What's funny is I'm
growing chickens.
I read an article, and it was like, and the title of the article was, like, should Link talk in this live-action series? And, like, and then whoever shared it, whatever, says... You can guess what the right answer is. And I'm like, I'm going to assume that your answer is that he shouldn't talk, which is dumb because you can't really have him talk. Like, obviously he's got to have a voice. Like,
well, and he talked in the cartoon from 1980, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Elf from the Super Mario Super Show.
Was it a part of that?
Yeah, it was on Fridays. Like on Monday through Thursday, they would go in.
Well, there were
two
different animes.
Let's say there was a couple of different.
There was an older one, and then there was that one was different than the original.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, my bad.
But the whole direct to consumer thing is a good idea. I think that'd be pretty cool. Netflix shows and so forth. Be awesome.
Well, I mean, and there was also somebody wrote an article basically that said like, should Disney buy Nintendo or whatever, or be the one that in charge of their, you know. Bring their stuff to like film or whatever. I'm like, I kind of got a little nerd boner. I was like, oh, Marvel Marvel Link or Zelda movie, I'm like, I can get on board.
Like, get Luke Skywalker, like, do the Smash Brothers video game, but now you'd have Luke Skywalker, you'd have Link, you'd have Wolverine. You know, there's so many fun things we can do now. Indiana Jones.
I really enjoyed this idea. Explore more.
Quick, Disney, buy something. And then, I mean, Nintendo has the rights to, like, Sonic the Hedgehog now, because they bought the Sega game rights as well. So there's an even larger plethora of games that we could tie into it.
Mega Man.
I want a live Mega action. Man would be so cool.
I want a live-action Pokemon, but the Pokemon look like actual animals.
Like a spray-painted yellow cat?
Or? No. Like, I mean, there's an artist on DeviantArt, I cannot remember his or her name, who does artwork they make the Pokemon look like an actual thing.
Animal.
You know, I have like a Jigglypuff tattoo, and I think that's a bad idea. No, I'm just kidding.
But he actually does have a Jigglypuff tattoo. Super,
it's looking at Troy right now.
Yeah. Looks like it needs to be redone.
Fall asleep.
I don't get the reference. Sorry.
I think it'd be fun.
It's a big controversy with Jigglypuff in the gaming world. Like, 3 weeks ago? Apparently you can trigger Jigglypuff's move in, I believe it's Super Smash Bros. Melee, faster than any others, and it forces the character to go to sleep.
Yeah.
But you can't really damage them, they just go to sleep.
Yeah.
And so apparently there was a very major tournament going around, and this player just did this to the other guy until he gave up playing. Like, it was like the ultimate war of attrition. Like, he just, guy would jump in to do his move, and he'd put him to sleep. And then once it wore off, he'd jump around as Jigglypuff, he'd go in to attack me, put him to sleep. Like, apparently this match lasted, like, an ungodly amount of time. It was like 2.5 hours.
You'd have to continuously have a Jigglypuff like spawn. Like, you can't just have a single Jigglypuff the whole match. I'm sure. Like, those things like go away, right?
No. Jigglypuff's like a playable character.
Oh, playable character.
Since the first.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Okay.
He was unlockable in the first one. I forgot about that. He's been a standard character in the other two.
I was always Link.
But yeah, they were making fun of the fact that somebody rage quit because they, like, in a major tournament where, you know, and not an insubstantial amount of money was on the line, they rage quit because they're like, I just can't play with this guy anymore. Apparently he was swearing and was just mad, but this guy just kept putting him to sleep.
That's hilarious.
Just never dealt him any damage, really.
Well, no, there was, well, in, like, the original, when you'd make him fall asleep, that was, like, down B would make him fall asleep, and then up B was a move that only worked when they were asleep.
It was my understanding.
Is that not something that's carried on in Brawl and Melee?
I don't understand. It had something to do with a very specific Jigglypuff version in one of the games. Because they're all... There are four of them? Three or four of them. Cool. All of them have different tournament brackets and so forth. Whatever it was, like, there was a video of it of this guy just visibly getting incredibly frustrated because he kept putting him to sleep and just refused to fight him.
That's hilarious. I love that. I want to make people mad.
Or I wonder if he just did that just to be a jerk. Like, he probably could have beat him up, but he just chose not to.
Yeah, just to put him on tilt.
The guy, like, slept with his girlfriend, you know, that was his revenge.
You like sleeping with people, huh? Let's do this.
How about you sleep with Jigglypuff?
Okay. We're like 45 minutes in this episode, so let's talk about what's coming up. Let's talk about our tabletop gaming experience. And what we're going to do here at the brothel. Hopefully.
Yes. Caveat. Asterisk.
Cody, you clearly have the most tabletop experience of any of us. And for those of you that aren't in the know, what is a tabletop game, Cody Grady?
It's a game you play on a tabletop mat.
Oh, that's great. Like Euchre?
That is technically a tabletop game, I suppose.
So in this sense of tabletop, we mean the standard RPG.
Yes.
A role-playing game. In which there is no board, you are in the realm of fantasy in your imagination.
Yeah.
Does that sound all right? We will be playing Dungeons & Dragons. What version?
This is the new version, so people, it has either been called, on the books it just says Dungeons & Dragons, so some people are just calling it Dungeons & Dragons. Originally it was conceived as D&D Next, which I think is a terrible name.
Yeah, it sounds like the iPad 1.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or like New Coke.
Or a lot of people have taken to call it
New Coke. Hang on, that was a sitter. That worked. Oh, that's a good joke.
Fifth edition is what most people are calling it.
Yeah.
So we'll be playing with the newest edition.
Okay.
And we will be playing a canned adventure because I don't have time to make up my own. We'll see what happens after this. And it is a two-parter, and it is called Tyranny of Dragons.
They are quite tyrannical, as I understand it.
Yes.
Lucas, tabletop gaming experience?
None.
None. Never played anything like this.
No. So I'm super excited to give it a shot.
Cool. Troy?
Same here. Never, ever, ever played it.
Really? Yeah. That's exciting. We will also have Jeff Thorpe with us. Anybody else playing?
For the moment, no. We're going to see how it goes. Four is about... so when they... a lot of times when they design this game, in third edition, you had a thing called challenge rating. I'm pretty sure that's gone from the game now. But it sort of judges that a group of people, what their abilities would be, how much damage they could do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and what they could take on. So if I go above a group of four, then I have to adjust everything to have two extra goblins or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's assumed that you take in a party of four. So we're going to try a party of four and see what happens.
Okay. I have played Dungeons and Dragons maybe 3-4 times in my life. Played a lot of Vampire the Masquerade back in the day. Anybody remember that game? Or
no.
Remember
that
game? I played it tabletop. I've played it live action. There was even a television show based on the game series just called The Masquerade. It was super, super fun. Well, like 11 episodes, and it was on Fox, so of course it got canceled, much like Firefly and what have you.
In all honesty, like, I've heard of, because of, you know, getting involved with the comic book shop and everything, Dungeons and Dragons before this, like, it was the only thing that I ever knew really existed as far as this kind of thing. I didn't know there was other things.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's, you talk about vampire and all this other stuff, but,
yeah.
So, I'm super, super, like,
green on it. Recently, whenever I visit, like, Half Price Books, I go to their little gaming section, and it's just, like, a wall of these types of RPGs that I never knew existed. And they all look fun.
Yeah, they're all... I mean, everything's unique and
nobody makes these games to be boring, Lucas.
Well,
maybe they do.
This is The Adventures of the Librarian. It's not the Noah Wiley TNT version.
This is 2 hours of people going, shh.
Yeah.
Shh.
Awesome.
Reading! No, they're fun and interesting games because it you're not restricted by any sort of rule set. If you guys want to totally try and put the Dungeon Master on tilt and murder the first character you see, you can totally do that. You can imagine it as you will. And that's what's really fun, is you're not just playing a game where you could look up a guide online and you know what level 1 is going to be, what level 2 is going to be. The players actually drive it. You know, the Dungeon Master dresses everything up and makes sure you follow the rules. But really, whatever the players do is how things change, which makes it a lot of fun.
The game runner has the map, has the outline of where the game should go, and the choices are left to the players. Whereas if you're playing Super Mario Brothers and, you know, you
don't run left.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't, right? You know, the choice is taken from you. So that's the main difference in these kinds of games, which makes it, in my opinion, infinitely more fun. This is like the first time you played Grand Theft Auto 3. And you didn't do a mission. You were just running around the world, fucking hookers, killing who you want, taking money, doing whatever.
Running everyone over.
Yeah. You know, like, you have that bad day at school, and you're like, that's it, I'm going to kill so many hookers today. And you go home, and you start killing hookers.
See, I did that with Skyrim.
Fair enough. If you have that kind of mindset, then these kinds of games are actually really fun for you. Because you understand, I can break whatever wall I want. I can do whatever I want in this universe. If I want to roll a d20 to see if I take a huge shit, I can do that. Okay? It's a waste of time, and it's stupid. Probably shouldn't do it.
Does it drop your encumbrance by 20 points or something?
It drops a load by 20 points.
Which playing Skyrim or Oblivion or other things like that is probably the closest thing I've gotten to playing
That's what I was thinking.
Dungeons & Dragons, like, you know, building a character and kind of playing in those sort of elements.
That's the great irony. Yeah. Those video games are modeled after
these
role-playing games.
Well, and if you go back far enough, like, to the point of... I don't think they really do it anymore, but if you've played, if you go back to some of the classic RPG video games, like
Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, Baldur's Gate, for example. Baldur's Gate is modeled exactly off of that
version. There's a new D&D video game coming out. I just saw
it. It's called Tyranny of Dragons, because they're looping this whole story together in Forgotten Realms. Yeah. Sending out.
I did watch the trailer, actually, which was good.
Yeah, for Forgotten Realms, the book series, it takes place in the D&D universe, yes?
Yeah, everything is... So there are a bunch of different universes, and Forgotten Realms is probably one of the most popular. I put it up there with Dragonlance. You could contest the two. Forgotten Realms is newer and was very, very popular, third edition. It's just sort of a defining box that you can put everything in. So certain races, certain classes, certain histories, and so forth.
And myself, I was a huge fan of Dragonlance.
Yeah.
I own over 60 of the novels. I've read over 100 of them. Of course, none are better than the original trilogies that came out by the creators of the Dragonlance universe, who were TSR game developers and worked with for Dungeons & Dragons, and have continued to do so throughout their histories. Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman. So,
both
like,
awesome people, by the way.
Yeah. Although Tracy Hickman's Batman book sucked. Really sucked. Really bad.
Gotham by Midnight.
Yeah, hated it. I don't remember what the title was.
Yeah, something, you're close.
It was horrendous.
I actually own it.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I didn't think it was great, but it was extremely predictable.
Oh, yeah. Like, within the third chapter, I figured out the whodunit element.
Like, oh, this is the Dark Knight Rises ending. Cool.
Yay!
Well, to be fair, Tracy Hickman's, you know, fortes lay in the land of fantasy writing and making games. I mean, Dragonlance was literally invented on a cross-country road trip with his wife when he went out to TSR to take over the job. So the idea was that when he showed up at TSR, which would eventually become Wizards of the Coast, and said, here's a whole universe I just created on my four-day drive from the East Coast, and that's what set his whole career, because he set everything in Dragonlance.
Yeah. I'm 32, I still read Dragonlance books. In the rare chance that one gets released, I go buy it and read it. I love them. And so I've always been mired in this universe. However, I know Dragonlance is a campaign.
They call it a campaign setting. So yeah. it's a you can
different gods, different rules of the universe.
Right. It's just that the different settings all have a little bit of a different flair. Dragonlance and Forgotten Realms, I would say, are somewhat similar. They're just your high fantasy realms.
My character in the upcoming game we're going to be playing is a cleric, a Tempest cleric, a Storm cleric, the chaotic evil alignment. The interesting thing is that when you were describing the god that I'm supposed to be following, you're describing the character who is a god, Zeboam, from Dragonlance.
Yeah, and they're probably very similar.
Probably, like, to a T, similar.
So it's like the Roman gods and the Greek gods.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's Mars and
Roman
Apollo
gods
or
just
whoever.
Stole the Greek gods and gave
Apollo
them their names.
Apollo actually has no analog. It's Apollo is on both sides, so just so you know that.
Fair enough? Okay. Fine.
The Roman gods stole the Greek gods and just changed the names?
No, like Apollo literally...
No, Apollo and Hades were the same.
No. Apollo is... There's only one Apollo. He is...
No, Pluto and Hades. That's what
it's Pluto and Hades, but Apollo exists both in Roman and Greek mythology.
Okay, fair enough.
Until they did that, they had, like, Jeff got him biscuits.
What?
Eddie Izzard, watch it, damn it.
Okay.
Jeff got him biscuits. That's a funny bit.
I'm glad you guys all know this joke that I don't know about.
Well, it's another DVD I'll have to bring you.
But no,
I've been watching Patton Oswalt stand up on Netflix.
You
have
that? You have Dress to Kill?
I have all of them.
Oh my god.
Oh, almost all of them.
I may need that burned or something.
It should be a really entertaining time. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be fun because the thing with Dungeons & Dragons is after you play it for a while, you get... It's a very math crunchy game, so once you get the numbers, you start understanding mathematically how it works. And to me, once you do that, it's not very fun. But playing with guys who have never played before is going to be so enjoyable because you're going to make those moves or make those choices not knowing that, oh, this thing isn't this thing is resistant to bludgeoning damage.
See,
or
I'm
what
not,
have you, you know what I mean?
I'm not going to be very good at that. I was an art student. So I had literally one class for math in college, and I got a C.
I never took it. I didn't even take math. Like, what's the max score you can get on the ACT?
Algebra or something. What?
What's the max score you can get on the ACT? It's like 40, right?
ACT, I think, was 40. It might have changed even.
So like
the SATs have changed. The score, high score has changed.
Well, okay, at the time that I went to college at Indiana State University, you only had to have a 20 in math to not have to take math.
Wow. Nice.
So,
wow.
I made it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, with my D- math score.
I mean, much like your Skyrims and your games like that, you eventually can kind of get an idea, I'm facing level this, I can fight it because I have weapon X and ability Y. And D&D can be like that once you kind of figure it all out. But like I said, what would be really fun is that you guys will probably be experiencing it from a role-playing perspective more than a numerical perspective, and it will change your reactions. It'll make it more enjoyable. It's one of the reasons why I normally don't run Dungeons & Dragons anymore. I run things like Call of Cthulhu, where it's much more story-based and immersive.
Which, when we played our Monophobia, I won, in my eyes, even though I still went to prison at the end. But I survived and was sane, so in my eyes, I won.
I feel like Cody kind of led you there.
Oh, don't say that.
I even asked you that. I was like, did you kind of lead Matt to a happy ending? Because you guys went so long, and it was like, I feel like Matt had said something, or it was the admitting to killing a guy or whatever it was that just landed you in jail, and you're like, I don't know, but I was like, I feel like he's leading them to.
No, Matt made
the show on a good.
Yeah,
I had really good roles in that game. I really did.
There we go.
That's one of those things that for me is fun. Is what do you do when you have one player, and that player immediately confesses to being a part of a murder scene and a potential suspect? It's like in real life, he would go to jail and he'd be locked up. So it's like, what do I do in that moment? That's what's fun for me is that. While you guys are doing that, I'm pulling the strings. Yeah, what do I do? What if, you know, what happens if Lucas's character dies immediately in the first fight you guys have? Like, what do we do?
I wait six hours
until you can give me a ride home.
That, if you die in the first fight, you're going to be the DD then.
Oh, but no, it should be fun. It'll be interesting to see what you guys do.
I feel like it should be the opposite way. He's out first, and he should be able to just sit back and.
No way, man!
I'm going to sit back and drink all punishment.
He's going to have to drive me home and let take my car.
I guess it'll be Rick's the first one who's drunk then.
I mean, is that enough background? Do we understand now, audience, what we're going to be doing for the next series of episodes?
I'm so excited about doing this that my character has a 4-page short story background.
I mean,
single spaced,
and that's the thing. When you get immersed, that's what's fun. So yeah. As long as you guys are finding things that you're enjoying,
I feel like I have to, like, maybe it's the writer in me that developing a character, I have to do something more than just a bullet point thing.
I didn't think about it until Cody called me the other day and said I have to think about it. So
it will make the experience very different if you do, because then it's less of a I'm playing this. You know, video game character, and I'm going to do it. It'll be more like you owning up to it personally. This is my person. These decisions do affect my character, and so
I think I'm a chaotic evil person. So this will work perfectly for me.
That's true. Matt hates everybody.
Well, yeah. The evil part. I think chaotic neutral is probably a good alignment to start with. We'll see if he gets into the evil. There might be some inner party conflict.
The one thing I liked is that picture that you posted. I think it was you that posted on there about the. The characters associated with the different
alignments.
Comic book alignments, yeah.
Like, literally every neutral character, like, are ones that I love. Batman being lawful neutral, Cable being neutral, and then Doctor Doom being evil neutral. Just like, I love every single one of those characters. Like, so obviously I think I'm going to fall in somewhere in the neutral, like, realm somewhere. So I think I'm going to go true neutral, but...
And with that, I mean, again, it's the story drives the game. So if you feel a certain way, you start doing things a certain way, that might be, you know, the end of it will be like, hey, Matt, you were really kind of being evil. We might want to think about switching your alignment to evil, you know, and be like, hey, guys, you noticed a change in Matt over a few weeks. He's, like, really enjoying the bloodlust, you know, and that'll be the stories that we develop as we play. We won't know what happens until it happens. And
I want to be the first Dungeons & Dragons drug dealer. I'm going to try to get everybody addicted.
I'm sure it's been done.
Is it?
What's the rule?
Simpsons did it.
Jerk. I'm going to volunteer to make all the meals. And then, like, slowly give you all...
Rat poison.
No, just get you all addicted to heroin.
I mean, there's so much... And these are the best stories, because there are things like that I can tell you from prior games that people have done. I mean, you know, rogues constantly stealing from people within the party... feeding people tree tokens was always a fun thing that we used to do. Just weird stuff.
What the fuck's a tree token?
What's a magic word?
Skooma.
Skooma.
Elder Scrolls, yeah.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, the mushroom.
You toss a token on the ground, and you speak a magic word, and all of a sudden a 10-foot-wide, 100-foot-tall tree sprouts. So if you were convince someone to eat
How's
it...
How's that useful?
Well, eat it. Then I say a magic word. What happens to you? See, that's what the fun thing. You couldn't possibly do that in a Fallout or a Skyrim. But in this game, if you come up with it and you think about it, you can. We once played a thing where this guy had a whole tower and we were supposed to fight a wizard. And at one point we were all like, screw this. So we just found out a way to knock the tower over. He's standing up on the tower waiting for us. We're like, we don't want to go up there. Our party's really injured. What if we blew up the base of the tower? Like, it would fall over, right? That's physics. And the DM was just like, really?
Is this post 9/11?
No.
Were you like, can we get on our wyvern and fly into the side of it?
No.
I'm just checking.
No.
A wyvern's a dragon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
we did. Okay. Yeah. Got it. It's a... Doesn't have arms, it's wings, and legs.
Okay. Handsy wings.
You guys are dicks. So I think that's going to do it for this week here at the Brothel. We will hopefully be with you next week with Dungeons & Dragons 5th
Edition.
That's
the plan, as long as nothing weird happens.
D&D Next, or New D&D, or...
Yeah, let's not call whatever. It D&D Next.
D&D Max.
D&D Reboot. D&D 1. Either way, we will be here next week. We'll actually be at Cody's house next week. And we hope to have you all listen. So, take care, be safe, love one another, and buy comics at the Android's Dungeon. 9719 East U.S. Highway 36.
See you again.
46123.